Welcome to Design Oracles. We are here to pontificate, evangelize, and educate you on residential interior design and architecture.
I'm Amity Worrell, interior designer of Amity Worrell & Company.
And I'm Diane Kett, architect of DK Studio.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Design Oracles. This is Amity, and we also have...
Diane.
And today, we have some guests joining us. Tell us your names.
Hi, Lisa Moon.
And Peter Moon.
Great. And this is a discussion today that we talked about a little bit earlier about how different disciplines within the interior design and architecture field and surrounding approach problem solving for their clients, how it's different, how it's the same. So tell us a little bit about yourselves, your history, your company, and what it is that you do.
Sure. We run a painting and wallpapering company, primarily high-end residential, so a lot of work that interior designers tend to be involved in. We ourselves are based out of San Antonio, but we also have an Austin location. And I think the business kind of got launched when Peter and I got together. We met about 12 years ago now.
Yep.
And we each had our own specialties at the time.
We were both craftspeople. I was a painter and wallpaper installer, and Lisa was a faux finisher. So
back when that was a thing.
It's still a thing. We're bringing it back.
There you go.
Well, wallpaper for sure. But we were starting to age out a little bit and wondered, well, what else? You know, we know the industry. We love the industry. We had a great reputation, so we just kind of parlayed that into a company. And we turned out to make a really great team. Lisa's a fantastic ideator and researcher, and I'm a really good implementer. So
the doer. I love it. That's
good combination.
And I know you're wildly successful at what you do and in demand.
Thank you.
Thanks
sometimes
so much.
It feels very wild, but thank you.
For sure, the Wild West. So let's see. You mentioned in wallpaper is coming back in style and has kind of been that way for a while. And I would argue that maybe faux finishing is coming back. We've done more faux finishing recently than ever before. So is that primarily what you do for people? Is there a mix? Is it?
Gosh, our blend, probably about close to half of our work is actually painting cabinets because so many people want to update from the old oak or what have you cabinets and change the color. And then the rest of it is a blend of interior painting, some exterior, and then wallpapering and specialty. It's really basically any surface.
So those are the four main things because we don't paint like garage floors or anything. So
right.
we're doing interior and exterior painting, those being two, and then cabinet refinishing, wallpapering, and then we have a small faux finishing division. So I think we call it specialty painting division nowadays. But
yeah, people don't like those terms anymore.
Right.
So then tell me, I think that the most difficult part of your job, I'm going to tell you what I think the most difficult part of your job must be, is the cabinet painting.
It is. It's not something any guy, most interior painters, it's a learning curve. Mm-hmm. Because to accomplish a nice finish, you have to spray it. You have to fill grain. Without laying on such a thick, so many thick layers that you're going to risk cracking out later. We use lacquer because there's nothing like the smooth, buttery feel of lacquer. And a lot of painters aren't experienced in those materials.
But that has both been good and bad. So if there's a high barrier for entry, not everybody can do it. Then if you can master it, then you become very important, and you know, and you can charge what you need to charge. So the cabinet division has been a phenomenal boost for us. We wouldn't be in Austin right now if it wasn't for cabinets, because that was really our first push to say, you know, we're doing so many cabinets here in San Antonio. I mean, we did 200 kitchen cabinets sets last year. So being an expert in something that's very difficult has been really good for us, for the company. Mm.
So can you say more about that as far as why lacquer? Because I'm just going to throw out my limited knowledge here. It's actually pretty good knowledge about paint. But I have painters who come in and say they want to use Cabinet Coat, which is a brand, is a branch off of, I think, Benjamin Moore.
Yes.
Can you talk about the wild world of the different paint options and why you landed where you landed?
Well, there are some really good water-based products, Cabinet Coat being one of those. Command is another one. Sherwin-Williams Pro Classic is a great product as well. And so you know, everybody's trying to be more green, you know, for lack of a better word. So lacquer is sometimes, you know, not the optimal thing, especially if you have COPD or asthma or something like that. So, but, you know, when possible, that, you know, all the almost every piece of furniture in your house is made with lacquer. And that's the reason that furniture makers and cabinet makers love lacquers, because it dries so hard and so fast and has that beautiful, smooth finish. So, you know, it's very difficult to go into someone's home and actually do that. You know, in a factory is one thing, and spraying it in a home is a whole nother. But, you know, we really, it was just an early differentiator for us. We started with lacquer, so we just figured out the ventilation and the respirators and the things we had to do, the air scrubbers and things that we have to bring into people's homes. And it's a quick process. You know, once lacquer dries, then it's inert and it's not off-gassing anymore. So, you know, just not many people want to do that, to go into someone's home and bring a, you know, really strong product like lacquer. But it has been a huge differentiator. We are going to eventually probably make a swing toward the water-based products. It's the wave of the future. They're outlawing oil-based paint, you know, all over the country as we speak, and probably lacquer will be right behind that. So, you know, yeah, we will have to eventually pivot, but it's just, it's so hard because it dries so fast and so beautiful. And you know, water-based products have been pretty good, and we can get 90% of that performance, but we just haven't found anything that we can get.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for that. We experiment sometimes with different products and different techniques, and I'm still waiting for, I still haven't found anything that matches that feel. So it'll get there. I mean, the big companies are all working on that, so it'll get there.
Yes, as we speak, research and development is, and the chemists are all working on it as we speak. And
totally.
The, yeah. And the paint world has changed enormously
yes.
in the time I've been in this business, 20-some years. It's not the same at all. We only always used to use oil-based, so
yeah.
It's definitely changed.
Yeah, so I was going to say, if you come across a kitchen that's 25 or whatever years old, and then putting another paint on top of that, don't you have to pay attention to what that original paint was? And
yeah, I mean, and that's the other thing about lacquers, there's less issues with that. You know, mm-hmm. when you're putting some of these water-based products over, you know, some of the old lead-based oil-based products actually dry like ceramic. I mean, it almost feels like a piece of ceramic. So, but the lacquer is a chemically hot product, kind of melts its way into whatever you put it on, so it's way more sticky and less issues.
The key is the right primer, just the right primer.
Yeah, the right amount of sanding and right primer. So when you're going over the other products.
So it's so interesting to me, because one of the big conversations we have with clients when they're about to paint, and we're talking mostly, by the way, just to be clear, about renovations.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay, I just wanted to be clear, because I don't think we said that early on. And you had mentioned shop painting and how you can achieve a better finish if you're shop painting a cabinet, or maybe what a lot of the cabinet companies do. But what you're doing is a lot of the times working with an existing material, an existing
correct.
Cabinet. And so it's that is the exact piece of it that people, there is impatience related to. People get impatient with oil, with not lacquer, but with oil, because it takes so long to dry and it can be tacky if conditions are not right, and it can be difficult, which doesn't happen with, of course, the water base, but then you don't get the same performance. And so I do think there's some cost relationship, too, with if it can be quicker, the labor costs can be
for
less,
sure.
And so it's more achievable. Is
yes.
that true?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's all about speed, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, we hardly ever use oil-based paint anymore because, well, one, if people live there, oil-based paint off-gasses for 8 hours. So it's, you know, it can build up overnight once we close the doors and leave and the people still live there. You know, it's really difficult. So we've almost exclusively gone to water-based products as far as trim and stuff goes. But lacquer dries so fast, we can get it dry and ventilated before we leave, and then it's not building, it's not off-gassing all night. So mm-hmm. we don't have those same issues. But so oddly enough, we're getting away from oil-based paint, but we're still...
So interesting, because that's exactly a very good point. It's true that trim... And doors, when we say trim, just for the wider audience, we're talking about doors, door trim, window trims,
baseboards,
crown moldings, any sort of panel details that will be painted. Those you would use latex product, right, or a water-based product, I'm sorry, a mix, maybe a blend of those.
Well,
two.
If the house is unoccupied, like we're mm-hmm. doing, we've got a remodel going in Alamo Heights right now, and the clients don't live there, then and she wanted oil-based, then we'll use oil-based because they're not living there, and,
yeah.
and it and we don't have to worry about it. But if the people live in the house, definitely we are going towards the water-based products, Pro Classic for Sherwin-Williams, and Benjamin Morrill's got some Regal Select and some
yeah. I love it. Such a fun world. So let's talk a little bit about wallpaper then, too, because I was actually just corresponding with a client this morning regarding the amount of wallpaper that might be needed for a powder bath. And I thought to myself, oh, my goodness, that question has so many different answers. So can you talk a little bit about how what I mean by that and what the challenges are with wallpaper?
Peter's our wallpaper guru. I'm going to deflect to him
here.
Take
a deep breath and tell us the story.
Well, I'm that is how I'm going to make become rich is to figure out a way to teach people how to measure wallpaper.
No, don't teach them. Then they won't come to you.
Well, what happens when I die? Because right now I'm having to do. I'm doing 5 to 10 wallpaper estimates a day now because we're doing them mostly online, and so it is a very difficult the way all the wallpaper is packaged and sold in so many different ways. You know, the 21 inches, 27 inches, 36 inches, you know, 54 inches, and some sold by the yard and some by the bolt. And then the European came.
Those damn Europeans.
Yeah, they came in.
They make it so much harder. Sorry.
They did. Well, I mean, everything, I've been doing this for 45 years. So in the beginning, wallpaper was sold by the single roll package and the double roll. Well, the Europeans said, you know, this is stupid to call this thing a double roll. This is one roll. So they started calling it a roll. So that's really where the whole
Euro-roll.
Complicated thing started. So, yes, wallpapering, measuring for wallpaper is an art. Oh, my gosh, it is an art. Mm.
So I'm going to tell...
That takes a lot of math, right? Yeah. Because you're talking all these different ways of conversions representing numbers.
And then let's talk about repeats. Can you talk to us about repeats and pattern repeats?
What's a repeat?
So, you know, if you envision a piece of wallpaper, you know, it's got birds or flowers or, you know, geometrics or whatever on it, you know, if it's got a match from one side to the other, and sometimes it matches straight across. If you just go straight across the paper, that geometric will match up exactly there, and sometimes it's alternated. So, like, they call that a drop match. So, like, it'll match like this.
Like at a diagonal or something.
Because I'm doing it with my hands, and you can't see my hands on
the podcast. Straight matches like drawing a straight line across
So wall. It means it matches straight across the paper. That's where your match is. And then repeats is how big, when is the next time it repeats. So like you're in a restaurant, you look at the wallpaper and you see the same leaf and then look down and see how far it is before you see the next leaf of the exact same.
It's a great way to put it. So it's really what it is the difference between a happy client and a very unhappy client.
Yes.
And it is a very big conversation as far as sometimes we have to order much more wallpaper than is strictly needed to just apply to the wall because we want the pattern, of course, to match. Most wallpapers, you want a pattern to match if the walls are wonky or there's a drop or... it's very much a science. I never do it myself. I always leave that to the professionals, no matter how long I've been working in this field.
Yeah, not only that, but if you have a 2-inch gap between two door frames, you've got to cut a whole 27-inch piece. So all that extra besides the 2 inches is actually waste. So, yeah, there's much more waste. The only time I'm ever short of paper is when people measure it themselves or when they tell me how expensive the paper is and to please be careful.
Yes. And so let's talk about that because a roll can be 75% of it might need to be, I hate to use the term waste, but not used, wasted, because of the pattern matching. And it hurts people's hearts when they've paid a significant amount of money for that. But it isn't usable. And it's true that it isn't usable unless you want to wrap gifts in it or use it in another space.
Line the drawers of your dresser with it.
Think about this. If you have a straight wall, which is a lot of what we're doing nowadays is just feature walls. Powder baths and feature walls are probably the two things we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
But picture it. You got a wall that's, 10 feet wide, and the paper comes in 27-yard rolls, and your ceiling's 10 feet. So you're only going to get 2 10-foot strips, and then you're going to have a 7-foot strip, and there's nothing you can do with that 7-foot strip. So that you're right. That's all waste. And people see that after the job's over, and they're like, oh, look at all this paper that's left over, but it's a bunch of 7-foot strips that we can't do anything with. So,
I usually ask my installer to take it away with them when they go. Don't leave it on the site because it isn't useful and it isn't helpful for the client to worry about that.
Yeah, we do the same. We'll have them leave usable scraps.
For sure.
But if there's like a usable scrap plus a whole unopened roll, then we usually Please don't make the client get anxious about this.
It's just upsetting for them, and there's just no, it's not a, you know, it's, we don't always, things don't always work out exactly. It would be worse to not have enough. Let's just put it that
absolutely.
Way.
Yes,
absolutely.
Definitely worse.
Come up one strip short and then have to reorder and maybe not have this right dye lot available anymore.
Exactly, and I wanted to ask you about that. Can you tell us about that, what a dye lot means and why that's important?
So, you know, when the manufacturer makes a bunch of wallpaper, they'll make 10,000 rolls or 100,000 rolls or I don't know however many rolls they make, they're going to make it. So they mix a batch of paint up or whatever, and they make that from that batch. So they're going to, the next time they make another batch, they're going to remake it, and they're going to try to make it the exact same way, but it's just paint does not work that way. Most people don't realize that if you get a gallon of paint from two different Sherwin-Williams stores and put them side by side, and put one on top of the other, they will be slightly, ever so slightly different. You will not be able to touch up this paint with that paint because the machines are calibrated differently and whatever. So,
despite everyone's best efforts, everyone's aware of this and everyone's trying to do the best that they can, but we're just talking, you know, when you're talking, I don't know what the measurement, it would be, you know, microns of dye that vary, it can make a difference.
Yeah, and if the machine, you know, squirted it out a little differently. So anyway, the second dye lot will be slightly, ever so slightly, which you wouldn't notice in certain situations, but if you put it side by side on a well-lit wall, you will probably notice that it's a different color.
Yeah, and I think that many clients do have very discerning eyes, mm-hmm. and they do notice it, and that's why it's very important for us to have these conversations with them up front, because everyone's doing exactly what they should do, what is the right. And it's still, there's art involved in it, and there's humans built making it. And, you know, the same thing happens with tiles. If you order one batch and then they fire the next batch at another time, and if it rained that day, the day that they were firing it, the humidity will change the tile look completely. And so these are things to think about.
Everything, fabric, wallpaper, tile, everything that's colored.
I think one thing I would like to circle back to about paint, because I think this is super interesting and it comes up weekly for us, is explaining to clients why it's important, for instance, to paint a whole room at one time, or if they're going to go back in and cut open a wall and re-sheet rock, why, at the very least, it's important to paint that wall in its entirety, even if it's a 15-foot wall, left to right, floor to ceiling. Go. Tell us about that.
Yes, you do need to paint. If you're going to touch up a wall at all, unless you have the original paint and it was just applied last week, you're going to be better off applying the paint, painted edge to edge. It's the only way to avoid problems, right? That it might seem like a waste of effort, but it's not. Painting a wall is minuscule compared to the hassle of, oh, I can see that if I change angles, if I move over 3 feet, the sheen's just a little different because this got brushed on in a different direction mm-hmm. than when the roller got first laid down. Just avoid the issues and just paint it edge to edge.
And unlike lacquer, like I said, is chemically hot and it will kind of melt its way in. Paint is not. So once a paint is dry and then you stick another paint on top of it, there's always a thickness. I mean, it's minuscule, but it's discernible in certain lights, especially mm-hmm. when you got light coming down the wall. You can see that it's sitting on top. It's not actually blended into it. It's just sitting on top of the other one. So,
I love that I'm getting to ask you all of these questions and then have another person talk about it from their angle and have it kind of be reassured that we're telling the clients the right thing, because another thing that comes up, and this is just so interesting to me, it's not bad news, it's just news, that you can't, when we've had an opportunity to paint a cabinet, say, mm-hmm. and it's a satin finish, and it's a, I don't care if it's oil or if it's a latex or a water base, and then the cabinet, there's some damage and it needs to be repaired, and then part of it needs to be repainted. The sheen, even though it was called out exactly the same, it's sometimes even the same can of paint, if you have another layer of paint on that portion of the cabinet, it will be shinier than the other parts of the cabinet.
Correct.
And that
we call that flashing.
Oh, it's is not, that what that term
it
means?
It flashes, yeah, when mm-hmm. you the sheen is on top. So the flatter the paint, the less that happens. So that's why builders love flat paint, because you can go back and
for walls, and for walls, yeah,
and touch up, because it's on cabinets, much easier.
Yeah, lacquer does tend to blend in a little bit better. And and our projects, not only are we leaving any leftover product, but we always get spray cans made of the product at the time that we order it. Our supplier just, you know, puts the product in spray cans. And we leave those with the client for future touch-ups, because it's, as long as it's still sprayed, like Peter was saying, with the way the lacquer will melt into itself, mm-hmm. you have a higher chance of success.
Interesting. That's interesting. No wonder you like lacquer.
Yeah.
It sounds like it solves a lot of the problems I'm bringing up.
But. It does. If you can figure out how to work with it, because it is, you know, it is a little more difficult with humidity and heat and stuff like that.
Interesting, so. Yeah. So what do you think, I had this question, what kind of training do you have to go through? I mean, you've been doing this a long time. How do you train your teams, and what's that process like for you to make sure everybody gets the education that they need to be able to do their job?
Well, it is difficult because
patiently is the answer.
Yeah, nobody's, you know, the trades are not, you know, popular anymore. I mean, no one's growing up and want to be a tradesman, even though you can, you know, make really good money. I mean, I discovered that kind of accidentally. I went to school for 6 years and never could really decide what I wanted to be. Before I knew it, I turned around and I was a wallpaper guy. But I put four kids through private Christian school hanging wallpaper. You can actually make really great money in the trades now because they're so rare. And mm-hmm. so it is difficult. So we've discovered two things. We either have to hire people that don't know just sharp, you know, young guys and try to train them, or we have to try to buy talent. And so we've been mostly trying to buy talent. We've
hiring experienced painters.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know,
that's what I would do.
We have it's getting harder and harder to find.
It is. So
it is.
But eventually, if we want to continue to grow, we're going to have to double back and come up with like a training academy or something where we can really turn a sharp young kid that really wants to learn, you know, and help them learn the trade. And we have some, you know, really experienced guys we've identified that could do that.
Teach.
We mm-hmm. are starting to work on a Paper Moon Academy.
Oh my goodness, that is fantastic. I love that. I think that is so great that you're doing that, because it just doesn't happen anymore. And a lot of it's just because people don't have the time to do it. But also it's interesting that you're identifying someone who's going to be able to teach, because it also is a different skill.
Yes.
Not everybody can do it.
I mean, you can so mess up architecture with bad paint.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh, it's so disheartening when that happens.
So yeah, let's talk about that. You're the last ones in. Let's talk about that, because everybody points the finger at the painter, don't they?
I wish we could be the last one. And it seems like sometimes people say, "Well, let's make it look like we're doing some progress. Let's get the painters in there," because you know, you throw some paint up and things start to look a little more finished,
right,
that's always a temptation. But we fight that, because we really do like to come in pretty close to last so that we don't have to repaint it after people ding it up.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's interesting. So we're talking a little bit about then your process and what is ideal for you. So let's hear who your clients are, how you get them, how you take them through the process, how to solve their problems. Tell us that.
Sure. The vast majority is going to be residential repainting. We don't tend to do so much of the new construction custom homes. We have. That's where you run into most of the issues about us not being the last trade in.
Mm-hmm.
And someone decided last minute they wanted to move that outlet, and then the floor guys got stain on the baseboards. And I know you know all of those scenarios. But for the most part, we do repainting. Someone's already in their home, and they just want to update the color. Someone's bought a home. Big deal in Austin right now, and they want to freshen it up before they move in. So, you know, we'll evaluate what they need. You know, neither Peter nor I are trying to upsell. We're not trying to make the most money we can out of this. So a lot of times somebody will buy a home and they say, just paint it all, give me a bid. But the trim might be perfectly fine. It's a nice, fresh off-white that would work with what they want to do. Or the ceilings might be fine. So we're not going to, you know, they can have us do whatever they like, but we would advise them, look, this is where you'll get the bang for your buck. You know, you don't have to paint the ceilings, save that for your new appliances or whatever you want to do. How do you approach that?
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, we really try to help people identify, you know, that's why we love when we work with designers, because then we don't have to try to be, you know, faux designers, because, you know, it's really not our strength. We just want to bring the designer's vision to life. You know, mm-hmm. You and your designer get together and come up with a plan, and then we want to implement that plan. That's our favorite scenario. But, you know, oftentimes we get clients that don't haven't employed an interior designer, so we're called and we just try to find out, you know, what the end game is, what they're trying to achieve, what is their personal style. You know, sometimes you can ascertain that from their stuff they have in their house or their way they dress or whatever. But so we're, you know, we sometimes get fooled into that.
They're asking you which green, which
right,
blue,
right. Uh-huh.
Which white.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Just paint it white. That's my favorite. Just paint the ceilings white. Or just paint it black. That's the other one is black. So.
That's funny.
There's so many blacks, yes, and so many whites.
What about the issue of people living in their homes when this is happening? Is that, I know you mentioned that lacquer dries quickly, so it makes it easier. But when you're painting the whole house, do you work around them with them in the home?
We do. We'll talk to them and see what they want to do. So, you know, if it is truly the entire house, then usually they're going to prioritize the master bedroom, you know, the master suite, and then the common areas. Hallways and kids' rooms can usually, you know, be done after the more painful, the more living in mm-hmm. areas are done.
Yeah, we typically work with really small teams for that reason, in houses where people live. So that way there's just one area being torn up at a time. So the guys will go in, if they said, can you get the master suite done for us? We can just live in there and not have to worry about it. So spend a small team in there, and they're, you know, just in there for a couple of days. Then they, you know, we usually have a place where we set our stuff outside or in the garage or whatever. So they can kind of live in the house, because most of the houses we do are rich. People live in there. So you mm-hmm. want to try to minimize. I mean, construction is no fun anyway. So you just want to make it the least amount of no fun.
Absolutely.
As possible.
So, like, when you go in and there's this wall that was painted and had texture and they want to wallpaper it, like you said, a focal point wall, then do you all prepare that wall to get ready for the wall? Because I don't know if people quite understand how you have to get a wall prepped.
Yes, and that's actually my pet peeve now with peel and stick, which is great. There's a huge, you know, influx of there are a lot of up-and-coming graphic artists who have created their own designs and then get the peel and stick made, and you'll see, oh my goodness, if you put peel and stick into Etsy, you'll have 20,000 hits. And there's so many reels on Instagram now showing, you know, a young woman with a toddler just putting up a nursery wall. The issue is, unless you have a smooth surface underneath, you are going to see all those little bumps. And peel and stick in particular tends to be usually printed a little more shiny than more traditional papers. So it will not look the way you want unless you have refloated that wall. And for that, usually somebody is going to want a professional. They're not going to want to haul out the joint compound and try to smooth it themselves. That's
right. Well, the whole purpose of the peel and stick was so that, you know, people living in apartments in New York City or whatever could just do this wall and then just take it down before. Mm-hmm. But again, unless it's smooth, it defeats the purpose. And so then if you're going to smooth it, you might as well have just bought regular wallpaper. So
yeah, right. Because it doesn't look as good anyway, especially if it's got that sheen to it.
Absolutely.
And then, so interesting, the world of wallpaper, just like paint. We could, you know, there's the hand-painted, the DeGournay, and the Zubair, and the Scenic wallpaper, and I love it all. It's so great. And but, you know, and we can design the wallpaper, and, you know, there's a monkey, and you can have the monkey situated above the door frame if you work with the artist. And so there's just a vast world of that. We talked about the different sizing and things. But, yes, and then the prepping of the walls for it, and then the aligning for it. But I'm interested, because I know you've been doing this for quite a while, Peter, what trends you've seen, I know, over the years with wallpaper. Can you talk a little bit about what you're seeing now and what people are asking for now versus in the past? Or,
well, I think it's coming around now. Again, kind of like the word faux finishing, you know, has kind mm-hmm. of gone out in disrepute. Like wallpaper, just the word wallpaper, you know, a lot of young people be like, oh, no, because they're thinking of the wallpaper that was in their parents' or their grandparents' house. So wallpaper, I think the wallpaper companies have done a fantastic job of coming up with new and fresh and bright ideas and bringing back some of the olds. You know, the DeGournays that we hang today are the same patterns that we did, you know, 40 years ago. So the grass cloth is another one that's been around forever.
Mm-hmm,
you know, it has changed. You know, they're doing some cooler colors and some metallics and stuff like that. But grass cloth, we were doing doctors and lawyers' offices in the 1970s with grass cloth. So, but they've done a good job to reframe it, to add some metallics, to add some colors, and to and plus they're printing it on much better paper. We used to hate to hang murals back in the day because murals were always printed on really crummy paper.
Oh.
And they used to, like, you'd get them wet with the glue and they would, like, turn like wet Kleenex. You know, it was awful.
Really?
So, but nowadays they're just printing, they're printing the murals on really good quality. I mean, I can feel it. It's kind of like a, they say the best way to find counterfeit money is to go to hand a bank teller and they can tell you what it feels like. And so it's the same with wallpaper. A guy that's been installing wallpaper, I can tell you if I'm going to have a good day or a bad day. Just I can just feel the paper. I can grab the paper and go like that with it.
So interesting. Yeah, and you get to a point where you can tell the texture if it's going to be successful in the room based on the smoothness of the wall. I've hung a lot of or been part of projects where we did bark paper. And you don't have to smooth the wall for a lot of the bark papers. They're made from trees. I mean, they're barks of trees, and so they're very rough. And so you can put them right up over a textured wall.
Yeah.
But it's just that knowing. It's that that's why the professional is so important in this.
Well, then you do have to have – you're right. Sometimes you don't have to, like, float it smooth, but you do have to have a certain level
sure.
of smoothness just to have enough surface – to stick on, especially if it's heavy. Like we had a lady the other day say, oh, it's really thick paper, and I'm going to hang it on the ceiling, so I don't really care. But we needed to have it smooth enough to where it has something to grab to.
Grip.
Because if there's too many, too much
indentations,
bumps, then it won't be touching.
So you put
surface.
Wallpaper on the ceiling.
Oh, we put a lot of wallpaper on the ceiling.
Yeah, we do lots of wallpapered ceilings.
Yeah.
Do you?
Oh, yes.
Yeah?
Always.
Have
yes.
I seen one?
Yes.
Okay.
Sis, you have seen them. Yeah, wallpaper on the ceiling is it's a great solution for if there's maybe not, I mean, ceilings can be big, but they can also be a little bit easier to manage than walls cost-wise.
Hmm.
In a kid's room, it's really fun, too.
So you would just do it on the ceiling and not the walls?
Yeah.
Sometimes.
Sometimes both.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like powder baths that don't have, you know, showers in there, people like to put mm-hmm. wallpaper on the ceilings in there and really mm-hmm. make it over the top, you know.
Mm. Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up bathrooms because I would love to hear about how, just like we've talked about the engineering changing of paint over the years, I know we love, painters love to use, I love to use as flat as possible for walls, mm-hmm. and it used to be a disaster for people, but now there's wipeable flats and flat wallpaper finishes so you can actually wipe the walls. Tell us about what wallpaper is in a well-ventilated bathroom. You can use paper, like a grass cloth, or maybe not a grass cloth, but talk about that for me.
Yeah, I mean, I think the most important thing is people to realize that they need to vent the room out. So having an air conditioning vent in the room is helpful, and having, you know, the exhaust fan. Sometimes people just think the exhaust fans are just for the commode odor, but actually if you especially take showers in there, you really need to get the steam out of the room, because if a steam sits in a room over time, it will, I mean, that's why they use steamers to take off wallpaper. Over time,
right.
Steam will take it down, but you're correct, they've seems to be less of that. I don't know, maybe because of the teenagers of the 70s, we took big, longer hotter showers.
I probably
had more hair, but it doesn't seem, I haven't seen that as much as.
And
I
then
used
there's
to.
Vinyl papers too. You can get vinyl
yes.
papers,
yeah.
or you can get your favorite pattern printed on vinyl and used.
Yes, yes.
I guess that makes it easier to clean.
Oh. Yeah. And just more water safe.
Sometimes they use
oh,
those
yes.
in healthcare
yes.
situations.
Yeah. Well, if you think
right.
of hotels, almost every surface in a hotel room is usually wallpapered, and they
mm-hmm. figured it out.
They have.
And that is one of the big changes, too. I think commercial paper back in the day used to be a little unattractive. I mean, it was more utilitarian,
mm-hmm.
you know, pattern. But nowadays, they have some really, really nice commercial paper. Actually, and you can get, a lot of companies will print whatever pattern you on the house paper, they'll print it on the commercial vinyl, so it's durable and hangs really well. And
yeah, I think that technology has helped our world so much, our industry a
mm-hmm.
lot over the years. So we only have a few more minutes to talk today, so I want to make sure that I have given you the opportunity to answer the questions you find interesting, or talk about the things that you find interesting about what you do and who you do it for. Is there anything I haven't touched on?
I don't think so. I think it's similar to why most designers are in business, right? We love the before and after. We love the impact, and our particular trade tends to cover the most surface area in a home and therefore has a huge impact. Mm-hmm. And so that's just a thrill for us.
Yeah, so, you know, we've identified as one of our company, you know, policies or is that, you know, it's not brain science. We're not saving lives, but, you know, you do improve people's lives when you improve the surroundings that they live and work in. So we take that seriously and we really enjoy this industry and partnering with our designers. So.
That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming. We love working with you and we love what you do. You definitely change people's lives. So
thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you for listening to Design Oracles with Amity Worrell, owner of Amity Worrell & Company, and Diane Kett, owner of DK Studio.